Eliot says, I think we might divide up all the people in the world into two classes, the complainers and the thankful. Which are you? Which am I? Welcome to Gateway to Joy, the challenging radio ministry of Elizabeth Eliot, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty and Passion and Purity, Learning to Bring Your Love Life Under God's Control. Helping you find joy in your Christian walk with the Savior today. Here's Elizabeth Eliot.
Jesus said, Come to me, all of you who are weary and overburdened, and I will give you rest. Put on my yoke and learn from me. For I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. This is your friend, Elizabeth Eliot, talking with you again today about some of the people who have written to testify of how God has enabled them to find their gateway to joy through their sufferings and troubles. And they don't always put it in those terms. But one after another of you has written to tell me some wonderful story of how God has enlightened you, turned your life around, given you an answer to something that seemed unanswerable, or a solution to something that seemed insoluble. I had a letter from a young woman who said that she had just finished reading my book, Through Gates of Splendor, which is the story of five American missionaries that were killed in Ecuador. As some of you know, my husband Jim Elliot was one of those five. And my first book was called Through Gates of Splendor, which this lady had just read. And I decided to write and thank you for it, she said. I had recently read Don Richardson's books, Peace Child and Lords of the Earth, and the books were so riveting and compelling I could hardly put them down, I have to admit. Compared to them, Gates of Splendor provided none of the inside view of the natives, nor any of the action that so commanded one's attention. And I have to put in a little defense there, because the story of Through Gates of Splendor was the story of these five men attempting to reach the natives, but they didn't reach them for very long. They were killed in the attempt. So obviously, we really didn't know much of anything about the Alca Indians, except that they didn't wear any clothes, they were Stone Age people, and they killed strangers. But if you do want to read about the Alcas themselves, you can read my third book, which is called The Savage, My Kinsman, that tells the story of how God enabled me and my little daughter Valerie, who was 3 years old, and Rachel Saint, the sister of one of the other men that was killed, to go in and live with the Alcas. But this letter goes on to say, As the book drew to a close, I wasn't sure what to make of it until I read your 1981 epilogue and found there a response to the events that gripped my heart in their maturity and godliness. It made me feel like Job, how big God is, how little I am, how holy he is, how human I am. It helped me to see more clearly the issue of spending ourselves for God. It reminded me that the big picture isn't always available for our understanding to feast itself on, but that is not the issue and never was. Rather, that God is worthy, and worthy that we should throw ourselves at him and give up our petty reluctances and stop demanding that he should satisfy our reason. You wondered whether the old story should be told again, whether people still wanted to hear it. I wanted to tell you that what you wrote in those last few pages bore the weight of importance in the book for me. I needed to settle, for my sake as well as my children's, what life is about, and I needed to bury this self-preservation notion, which is so much of a mark and curse of the New Age. And she quotes something from the epilogue to my book, Through Gates of Splendor. It is God and nothing less than God, for the work is God's and the call is God's, and everything is summoned by him and to his purposes. He gives all the light we need for trust and for obedience. And I thought that I would read you a little bit from that epilogue, because the principles that I try to speak of here are so applicable to all of us practically every day in some form or other. It's difficult not to grasp after thrills. It was this kind of thing which focused what has sometimes seemed to be undue attention on that small jungle group called Aucas, deflecting, some people said, much interest from other vital kinds of missionary work. The Auca story at the time of the death of the men, later when I lived with the Indians themselves, and during all the years since, as I have recounted it and reflected on it in the light of my own subsequent experience, has pointed to one thing. God is God. If he is God, he is worthy of my worship and my service. I will find rest nowhere but in his will. And that will is infinitely, immeasurably, unspeakably beyond my largest notions of what he is up to. This is the context in which the story must be understood. And each of our stories, may I add, one incident in human history, an incident in certain ways and to certain people important, but only one incident. God is the God of human history, and he is at work continuously, mysteriously, accomplishing his eternal purposes in us, through us, for us, and in spite of us. Recently, Lars and I breakfasted with a woman who has been closely in touch with Rachel Saint and the Auca Indians. Rachel Saint is the sister of Nate, who was one of the five men killed. We asked this friend the crucial question, how many Christians do you think there are down there? I haven't the slightest idea, was her reply. She was not denying that there were Christians. She allowed that possibility, but felt, as I do, that salvation is not to be tallied up by anybody but the author of salvation. Rachel has translated many parts of the Bible. I understand that the New Testament has been translated entirely, but I think it's still only in rough draft. I may be mistaken about that. Maybe they've completed it by now. Many of the Aucas have learned to read. Some of them take turns preaching. Some of them write hymns. I hear all of this. And the Downriver group, which was very hostile to the group that we contacted, has also been contacted, and there are now friendly relations where there was nothing but hostility before. As far as I know, there are five or six foreigners, missionaries, who are working in or near the Auca people. Back to what I've said in this epilogue in Through Gates of Splendor, there is always the urge to oversimplify, to weigh in at once with interpretations that cannot possibly cover all the data or stand up to close inspection. We know, for example, that time and again in the history of the Christian Church, the blood of martyrs has been its seed, so we are tempted to assume a simple equation here. Five men died, this will mean X number of Auca Christians. Perhaps so, and perhaps not. Cause and effect are in God's hands. Isn't it part of faith simply to let them rest there? God is God. I dethrone him in my heart if I demand that he act in ways that satisfy my idea of justice. It's the same spirit that taunted Jesus, "If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross." There is unbelief. There is even rebellion in the attitude which says God has no right to do this to five men unless. And I think we all do this, don't we? Why would God allow a thing like this to happen, or a thing like that to happen, or something else to happen, unless he is prepared to bring something good out of it that we can see? And I need to clarify the remarks that I have been making about Gateway to Joy. We may not feel happy about things because we have surrendered them to Jesus. It may not necessarily alter our emotions. But joy is something very deep down. Joy, as those who have walked for a long time with the Lord discover, really doesn't have anything to do with circumstances. It's even deeper than emotion, higher than feelings. If you bring the thing which is troubling you to Jesus and leave it there, surrender it to him in hopeful trust, I do believe that God is going to give you joy in his own way, in his own time. Those five men had long since given themselves without reservation to do the will of God. So far as they knew, they were to be plain, ordinary missionaries. Raj to the Atshwaras, Jim, Ed, and Pete to the Quechuas, Nate to serve all the jungle stations with his airplane. But small things happen. Nate found some inhabited Alka houses. Small decisions are made. He told Jim and Ed about those houses, which led to bigger ones. They began to pray with new vigor for an entrance into the territory. And ultimately, a man's individual choices become momentous. Plain, ordinary missionaries with wives and children whom they loved found themselves faced with a life and death decision. They were not looking for anything bigger to do, let alone for fame. The need of the Alkas became, for them, the categorical imperative. For us widows, the question as to why the men who had trusted God to be both shield and defender should be allowed to be speared to death was not one which could be smoothly or finally answered in 1956, nor yet silenced in 1991. God did not answer Job's questions either. Job was living in a mystery, the mystery of the sovereign purpose of God. And the questions that rose out of the depths of that mystery were answered only by a deeper mystery, that of God Himself. May you find in Him your peace, your joy, and your rest today.
As Elizabeth has said, anything, if offered to God, can and will become your gateway to joy. Elizabeth Elliott has been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years, drawing insight from her Bible study and her experiences as a wife, mother, and missionary. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.